I think a lot of it is, what's my lifestyle? What are the economic choices that are important for me to make? And then what's my like comfort with risk, right? Do I see the upside of that variety of work, that access to more work when I need it and less work when I don't need it? Is that like a total game changer for my life?
Thanks for listening to IBKR's Sense of Security. As always, there's more content at ibkrpodcast.com. And if you're interested in learning more about interactive brokers, visit ibkr.com. We offer more trading education content such as webinars, market commentary, market-related courses, and quant-related articles at ibkrcampus.com.
Welcome back to the Sense of Security podcast. I'm Cassidy Clement, Senior Manager of SEO and Content and Interactive Brokers. Today, I'm your host for our podcast, and our guest is Brooke Kobe, IBKR's Global Head of Talent. In today's world, it's quite easy to get things delivered or a task completed from an app or a website. But what is behind the whole system? Is that line of work something worth getting into? Today, we're going to cover employment in the gig economy and the pros and cons associated. Welcome to the program, Brooke.
Thanks, Cassidy. Great to be here.
So what exactly is your background in the industry? How did you get into recruiting?
I have worked in some version of HR or recruiting or talent for the last 20 years, always in financial services. I worked at a number of banks and most recently at an asset manager. And I'm actually pretty new to IBKR, so I'm really excited to be here. But I found right out of school, I got a job through an analyst program at an insurance firm, actually. And I was always drawn to people. You know, I wanted to know how we were training new employees, how we were hiring new employees. And fundamentally, I've learned over the last few years, like, if you want to be part of helping a really great business grow and get better, one of the best ways you can do that is through people. And I've always just loved working on the people side, you know, bringing in great people to make a difference at companies. I'm here. It's great. And I'm excited to talk to you about the gig economy today.
Awesome. So I know like we're going to cover a little bit more deeper as we go through the questions, but what exactly is the gig economy? How are people paid? Because I know people will say like in the back of their minds, oh, there's a freelance job or a contract job, or maybe I'm going to supplement my income by delivering some Grubhub food. What exactly is all that? How are they paid?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like the term gig economy sort of came out a couple years ago, and it was enabled sort of by like this tech boom that people had access to doing multiple part-time jobs or working as a contractor. But if you think about it, like it's always been an option that you could do part-time work or a few little jobs. So if you think about it like that, that's sort of how I would position it. But actually in the last few years, we've seen kind of a boom in the gig economy. So like you and I probably took an Uber this weekend. That feels like a normal thing. I ordered a piece of furniture off of IKEA and I went to taskrabbit.com and somebody came and they, you know, had this skill as a carpenter and they were working for a few different sites and things like that. My sister just left her corporate job and she's got, you know, great skills as a brand partner, an ad salesperson. And she's now, you know, she's figuring out what she's going to do next, but she's working for a few different clients. I think one of the most interesting things on sort of the early career side is if you didn't know what you wanted to do, right? And you wanted to develop a few different skills, you could try a few things out, right? Like you could get a few jobs as a contractor or as a consultant, or you could go in for a 6-month project and test it out. So I would say that like on the early career side for young people leaving high school or leaving college is super interesting. You're starting to see a lot of young people do that. But actually the thing that I think is really interesting that's emerging is older Americans, as people are, you know, we have a massive retirement crisis in this country. As people are planning their retirement, or maybe they've retired and they want to supplement their income, or they want to just keep up their skills and keep active, you're starting to see retirees or close to retirees doing that. So, you know, I think I told you about my sisters. My dad retired or semi-retired a few years ago, and he wanted to stay active, but he wanted to supplement his income, and he's doing project work, which is a form of the gig economy. And it's one of those things, because I remember I graduated from college and it sort of seemed like a straight line, right? Like, how do I get a job? How do I get benefits? How much money do I absolutely need to make to live in New York City? And I didn't think about it in that creative way. But I think young Americans now really are seeing it. And it's a really interesting option.
You'd mentioned a few things. Some people they immediately think of, at least if more of the millennial Gen Z crowd, you immediately think of the apps and the websites that are very click to get immediate satisfaction or very quickly getting what you need filled. But as you mentioned, you know, with the gig economy, some people are taking skills that they have and doing maybe part-time or a freelance option. And then there's other people who are taking hobbies that they have that they're good at. Maybe they were a super good carpenter, but they were working in a bank most of their life. So now they help out with that as a supplemental thing. So are there well-known companies in this space that most people would be like, I've heard of that. That's gig economy. I'm aware of it.
Yeah. And I think TaskRabbit, you know, certainly any of the, listen, technology has enabled this because you can say yes or no pretty quickly, you know, whether it fits your schedule or it's a job you want to do, or it's in 20 minutes or in 2 hours, or you need, you know, you need to supplement your income. So you can say yes. So I think the, you know, the examples of like Uber and Lyft and some of the grocery delivery, you know, applications and things like that, that really, or just, you know, I think locally, as an example, we have some apps that support childcare. We have some apps that support tutoring, things like that. So people will sort of retain a relationship with a firm, you know, with a company that says like, I have this skill, I'm a math tutor, and the jobs will get posted. And they can say yes when they want to say yes, and they can, you know, not participate when they're not looking for the extra work.
When we're talking about some of these app type employment, how exactly would that differ from, let's say, a freelance or a contracted job?
There are a few different versions of this, right? Like, so you can be a contractor with a firm, and you have a relationship with them. You've signed a contract. You've agreed on the terms and conditions, how much you're going to get paid, how long the assignment is. Or you could just be effectively someone who's in the database of workers. You've gone through whatever qualifications you need to or screening that they can sort of come to you on demand. So I think there are a few different setups, each of them like sort of a little bit more flexible than not. And by the way, I think that's an interesting point in this, like the flexibility piece. So as you said, like not all gig jobs are the same, right? So you have sort of like the most, I guess what traditional that people would think of gig, which is like you're generally in their database. You can say you want the job or not, but they're not depending on you to come and work. And then you have these contractor setups where actually you say, you know, I work in recruiting. There are many recruiters who work on a contract basis, right? Like they'll say, I want to, and that has a real benefit, right? You could do that for 6 months. You learn a new company, you learn a new industry, you get sort of 6 months, and then you say, actually, I want to be a recruiter in a healthcare firm, and you switch firms. It's a nice sort of quantifiable skill that you can be quite mobile with. So that is like awesome flexibility, the range of those things. But you know, there's a downside to all of this, especially you know, if you don't have, you know, your savings isn't very robust, or you have a life setup that you're really trying to take care of people, or you want your healthcare benefits. So the benefits side of things, when you're in the gig economy, you don't get benefits. You're not a full-time employee of a company. And I say that on the healthcare side, right? Like being a full-time employee, most companies will offer access to health and dental, but there's also the retirement planning and the investment planning, which, you know, as research tells us, is that as an investor and as a saver, if you're enrolled in a retirement plan scheme, you're sort of more likely to accumulate savings. So if you're in the gig economy and you're doing part-time work, or you're just accepting gigs, you don't have access to those health benefits. You don't have, most likely you don't have access to a retirement plan that's, you know, helping you achieve savings. And you also, from a tax perspective, are quite different, right? Like you're treated quite different. So you and I both work for Interactive Brokers. The company sort of, we filed our W-2, we're planning for our taxes. We're not going to get hit with a totally unexpected tax bill come tax season. If you're a gig worker, or if you're a contractor, you need to plan for that. And I think that's a big skill that you need to learn and adjust to if you're working in these types of jobs.
So you had mentioned a few like items of this is great, this is not great, pros and cons. But otherwise, are there any other things when it comes to kind of, I guess we can say on a person by person basis, or maybe like a worker on worker by worker basis, meaning maybe some cultural things that your aspects that you would not get,
yeah,
or you know, the variety, as you mentioned, of tasks and the independence. Are there any other pros and cons that aren't necessarily monetary or tax-wise that people wouldn't think of out the gate?
Completely. I mean, I think, and I believe this so much, one of the reasons I work in talent is I think happiness at work, like feeling like you're doing something with purpose and that you're learning and you have a community of colleagues and maybe a great manager or some mentors, is like really important to your overall happiness. And I think there's a sense of if you're doing temporary work or if you're jumping from gig to gig while you have amazing flexibility, you're not part of that community, that firm-wide culture, that I think is actually, you can quantify monetarily, but you know, is also part of just generally the community you're in. I think there's also a sense of, I talked about this idea that the gig economy sort of enables people to develop skills, right? To go from gig to gig or to work part-time and go deep in something. But as a full-time employee, you know, very often companies may have a training program, right? They may, you know, you more than likely would have a manager that was a little more long-term, right? Who could teach you. You'd be sitting amongst colleagues. And not to say that you can't do that in the gig economy, but there's a little bit more permanence to it, that I think there's some training and cultural aspects that are quite important.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, kind of with the, we'll say like mentorship or could say a sought after path when it comes to a little bit more of a long-term employment scenario. Sometimes the employer is looking to invest in the talent. That way they can retain you. You can have a mentorship potential when you find some niche that you're interested in to see if somebody could help guide you. But another thing that I think people may forget about when it comes to gig economy type work is when you have to use it towards your overall income. Let's say that is what you do for a living. Usually in full-time employment, you kind of know what's coming down the pipeline. You're kind of like, okay, this is what I do. This is my general day today. When you're in this gig economy scenario, you kind of have to be incredibly planned out because you have to be ready to find the next gig when the contract is up or let's say the task is completed. And that's a big caveat because as you said, with maybe let's say an Uber, Lyft, et cetera, you're in their database. You're able to accept or deny potential employment or tasks or
right
potential ways to make money, where when you're looking for a contract or a freelance work, usually you have to interview, go through the process. It takes a little bit longer and you have to be able to say, okay, if this is only 3 months long, what am I going to do for the next 9 months of the year for my income?
Right. What next? Depending on everybody's different. I think a lot of people would find that quite stressful, right? Either financially or just like you're always having to think what's next. And the other thing I would add to that is, you know, there's also, I think the gig economy has been quite good for companies, right? Like think about, like, I know Amazon has a program, lots of firms where they have their business peaks, right? Like it's a particularly busy season or they just need more workers. You know, that comes with risk, right? Like if there's a challenging market or an economical turn, you know, you are less, I think, protected than full-time employees where a company sort of staffs generally, like, you know, if they're for their full-time staff, they think about who do we generally need to do the work that our business needs. And many companies actually use that model, right? Where they'll have certain number of full-time employees that they have as their general level, and they'll spike up when they have big time. So, you know, it depends on your sort of psychology and your appetite for risk, right? Because we talked about lots of those benefits. But if you're a salaried worker and a full-time worker, you sort of, you know, consistently what's happening. And I think you are, as a gig economy temporary worker, a little bit more at risk during more challenging times.
We mentioned kind of the comparing and contrasting of the full-time employment versus the part-time or gig economy. What are some questions that maybe someone should ask themselves before getting into a gig economy job, whether it's for supplemental income or if they would like to turn it into kind of their full-time gig, if you will?
Well, listen, I think anytime anyone's going into any sort of job, you have to think about, like, what am I good at? What's going to make me really happy? What's going to pay the bills or fill my time in a way that I'm comfortable with, right? Like, these are pros and cons. So are you looking for longevity in a career? Are you looking to try something out? Or, you know, and we've talked about this in sort of a proactive way, but there are certain parts of like the American workforce that don't have the choice of doing a full-time job, right? So I think a lot of it is, what's my lifestyle? What are the economic choices that are important for me to make? And then what's my like comfort with risk, right? Do I see the upside of that variety of work, that access to more work when I need it and less work when I don't need it? Is that like a total game changer for my life? Or am I someone that wants benefits, wants a 401k, wants a great manager, wants to start building, friends and colleagues and mentors at my job and sort of having a more steady plane? And I think, you know, people who are comfortable with that risk, A, or in a situation I was sort of mentioning, not everybody has the choice, potentially they can only work part-time, right? Like it works best for their life to only work time, or for 2 months of the year, you know, points of, you know, sort of like sprints of work that suits them better. Or they're at an age, whether it's an early age or a more later stage career, where they don't want to work 40 hours a week, right? They want to do work on demand or in certain sprints.
You're totally right in the sense of sometimes people forget that it's both sides of the number line here. You're going to have people entering who may be 16, 17, just got their license, were like, I need some extra cash because I can't work during hours I'm in school. So they may go out and help deliver food for Uber Eats. And at the same time, you might have somebody who says, hey, I was really good at being a seamstress, but I did this for 40 years as my main career. And now I am going to, you know, come prom, everybody's looking for a tailor. They're going to be doing great gigs. So there's always a spectrum to this. I know I have many friends and family who have done things as supplemental, or like, hey, I got a big purchase coming up, I got to pick up extra work.
Right.
You know, a house, car, kids going to college, etc. But these were all really great points. This was a great conversation. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. So as always, listeners can learn more about an array of financial topics for free at ibkrcampus.com. Follow us on your favorite podcast network and feel free to leave us a rating or review. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to IBKR's Sense of Security. As always, there's more content at ibkrpodcast.com. And if you're interested in learning more about interactive brokers, visit ibkr.com. We offer more trading education content such as webinars, market commentary, market-related courses, and quant-related articles at ibkrcampus.com. The analysis in this material is provided for information only and is not and should not be construed as an offer to sell or the solicitation of an offer to buy any security. To the extent that this material discusses general market activity, industry, or sector trends or other broad-based economic or political conditions, it should not be construed as research or investment advice. To the extent that it includes references to specific securities, commodities, currencies, or other instruments, those references do not constitute a recommendation by IBKR to buy, sell, or hold such investments. This material does not and is not intended to take into account the particular financial conditions, investment objectives, or requirements of individual customers. Before acting on this material, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and, as necessary, seek professional advice.